This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Safety standards and regulations.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 6 o'clock straight up. Coming up next, Right to Survive.
On Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the National Defense Budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Tickets on sale now at whatthefestival.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
I am your host, Lisa Fay, here on Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. Today we are coming to you from Ground Zero in the houseless community. The topic for today's show is the lawsuit initiated from Right to Dream 2 versus the City of Portland. The hearing is scheduled for 9 a.m. July 11th. That's tomorrow. In this show, we shall hear from housing advocates as well as dreamers who live at Right to Dream 2 on their views about the lawsuit and what it means for the houseless community and the future of Right to Dream 2.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 on your radio dial FM. And in today's segment, we discuss the topic of July 11th, where the Right to Dream 2 rest area and versus the City of Portland. And today I'm here with
Mark Kramer, the National Lawyers Guild, volunteer attorney for Right to Dream 2.
Attorney Kramer, why did you choose to help a homeless rest area, Right to Dream 2?
The immediate reason was a call for help from Right to Dream 2 in their efforts to overcome the city's attempt to get rid of the Right to Dream 2 site on 4th and Burnside. On a broader scale, the National Lawyers Guild, which I'm a part of, is a group of progressive lawyers who believes that the rights of the people are paramount, even when they conflict with the rights of property. Here, actually, I'm representing both Right to Dream 2 and the owners of the lot on 4th and Burnside, so it's a somewhat unusual combination, but here we're united in the challenge to the city's attempt to get rid of the site, understanding that there's chronic houselessness and homelessness in Portland, and that on any given night, there's over 180 individuals who just can't find a place to stay.
How do you feel about helping people who starting or willing to learn to help themselves?
I think in community organizing and in movement building, everyone has a role. Community organizers, leaders, lawyers. So I think the job of the lawyer is to try to remove obstacles and let people organize and try to achieve their goals, and that's the part I'm trying to play.
Mm-hmm. And taking the lead role on their defense, how do you see the city? Are they shocked that you're doing this, or they thought we was just the Right to Dream 2 organization was just a bunch of people, nomads?
I think any bureaucracy, any institution would prefer the least resistance and the least friction possible. So anytime there's a community organization that stands up for their rights, that creates a challenge for the city. And then when they have legal counsel, that creates a greater challenge. When they're asserting rights to have a place to stay, when the city and other organizations can't provide it, that creates a further challenge still. I do think the city is committed to addressing the issue. It's just that they understand, or they should understand, that there is a need for transitional housing accommodations like Right to Dream 2, and not everybody, even if there was enough shelter space, can fit into a shelter, can make a shelter work for them. And of course, there are rules prohibiting families, pets, and other issues with respect to housing in shelters.
Do you think that the fines that are imposed on the rest there are Right to Dream 2 is legit?
If you believe, like the city does, that this is a campground like a KOA or a Boy Scout camp or a Girl Scout camp, then Right to Dream 2 is not dotting their I's and crossing their T's and meeting those regulations. If you believe that what Right to Dream 2 is a transitional housing accommodation as people are going from one step in their lives to the other, then no, the fines are unfair and illegal. We would like a judge to be able to make that determination on the merits, but unfortunately the city has interposed technicalities, and so it may be that we never get a judge to address the issue on the merits.
What do you hope to accomplish by this lawsuit?
The ultimate goal is that Right to Dream 2 have a safe and secure place to meet the needs of the folks who are staying there, and that means safe, clean, accessible to transportation, and accessible to social services. If we can obtain that through political discussions, that would be ideal. If we can obtain it through the court, that's fine as well. Whatever course leads to the ultimate objective, that's the way we should go.
And I guess we have a few more questions, maybe just the last one. When you first heard about Right to Dream 2, what went through your mind? I mean, these are a bunch of houseless people governing themselves. So what was your opinion of it?
Well, part of my brain thought about Dignity Village, which is a successful model that grew out of community organizing and that the city did make a deal with. But as I understand, The Dignity Village site has its difficulties in terms of access to transportation and social services. And then, frankly, another thing that came to mind when I just heard is, you know, these are just people like people who are just sleeping under bridges, overpasses, parks, across from City Hall and so on, that just don't have a place to stay and are just making a temporary encampment. I had no idea of the sophistication of the organization, of the rules, of the leadership, its attempt to try to make these people's lives a little bit easier and help move them on to the next step.
Have you got any, like, feedback or flack from your colleagues for taking on this case?
Well, the people that I hang with in the National Lawyers Guild are extremely supportive. We're traditionally representing people on the outside trying to achieve and sustain power on the inside. So, no, I get a lot of support from my colleagues and peers.
And any feedback from the city attorneys and saying, Mark, Mr. Attorney Kramer, why are you helping these degenerates or whatever they call us?
No, I think the city attorney has his job, and as attorney for Right to Dream 2 and the property owners, I have my job. So there isn't any kind of that resentment. I think on a political level, I mean, the powers that be in the city would like Right to Dream 2 and others to believe, just leave it to us and we'll solve the problem. You don't need to do what you're doing. We'll get to you eventually. But, you know, as we know, there's a great unmet need for transitional housing that's currently not being met by the city, notwithstanding the efforts. And even in the current budget that's passed, even though some budget cuts were restored, I understand there's at least $100,000 in reduced funding for shelters.
And with the success and the positiveness that the knowledge that you acquired, what Right to Dream 2 is doing, does that give you a sense of pride and say, wow, these people are doing what the city is not doing?
It's just amazing to see what a small group of leaders can develop in meeting needs, and how people who you would not think are capable of organization and leadership can meet those challenges when given the tools. So it's inspiring.
And do you expect this case to drag out or to end quickly?
Well, that depends on what the judge does tomorrow, and it depends how discussions go with city officials, regardless of what the judge does. But if there's a will for a political solution, there's certainly the need for one. I think we'll get there.
All right. Thank you much, Attorney Kramer.
Thank you, Eve.
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in a houseless community, and the topic of our show is July 11th. And I'm here today with
Michael Moore.
Michael Moore, you're on the board of Right to Dream 2 plus an organizer of the Rose Cafe. And you've been following this Right to Dream 2 and the battle with the City of Portland and the Bureau of Development Service. Why is Right to Dream 2 taking the City of Portland to court?
Right to Dream 2 is suing the city because the Bureau of Development Services, shortly after Right to Dream 2 opened up, designated it a recreational campground, and Right to Dream 2 does not believe that what it's doing has anything to do with recreation. The recreational campground code is state code, and it was written with wilderness camps and scout camps and church camps in mind. It really was not written with the idea of an urban rest area for people who are unhappy in mind. So we appealed that designation and said that, you know, we don't believe that this is proper. The Bureau of Development Services denied the appeal. And at the time, the only option we had available to us was to do another appeal to a code hearings officer. However, the second appeal cost over $1,200, and you know, we're a lot of very poor people, and we didn't have those kinds of resources available to us, and so we decided that, and we also thought it probably wouldn't necessarily do any good, or we weren't sure it would do any good, and there would be no way to get the money back. So we didn't file that appeal, and that left us with no other options. And eventually, when we got some legal counsel, some legal support, our lawyer said, you know, after meeting some more meetings with the city where they just kind of weren't budging and just kind of kept putting things off, our lawyer decided, you know, the best course of action we have is to file a lawsuit.
Is there any laws or policy or code that Right to Drink 2 is breaking?
It depends on who you ask. So the city has an anti-camping ordinance that applies to public property. It doesn't apply to private property, strictly speaking. Right to Dream 2, we don't view it as a campground, so we don't even think, but people are sleeping there, and people are sleeping there overnight, and some people are sleeping there longer than overnight. So I guess it comes to a question of, you know, what do you consider camping versus sleeping versus, you know, what? I mean, the city has interpretations of camping that I find very disturbing. Like, if you're in Waterfront Park and you lie down and you put a blanket over you, suddenly you're camping. You know, and if you do that after 9 o'clock, you're breaking the law. A lot of people aren't aware of that because a lot of people who are housed, who are out and think that it's just perfectly normal behavior, would never be bothered by it because the police wouldn't bother people. But if they see somebody who they think might be homeless do it, then they do bother you. So, you know, is Right to Dream 2 breaking codes or policies? I don't know. It might be. But again, our contention is if it is, it shouldn't be because we need some place for people to go. Right now, the point is that people are going to be in violation no matter what. I mean, just by virtue of existing without a place to live, people are breaking codes and violations, and that is not right. The law doesn't always work in favor of people who don't have resources.
What you're saying is that the city is imposing unjust laws on us and telling us we're breaking it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as if there's an alternative. You know, it's not as if we could, if Right to Dream 2 cease to exist, it's not as if the 60 to 80 people who sleep there every night suddenly wouldn't be breaking any codes at all. They still would be just because they're alive.
See, that's the next question I was going to ask you. If they, the city, managed to get the case dismissed, is Right to Dream 2 finished?
I don't think so. I mean, I think there are still political solutions. Right to Dream 2 has managed to build up a lot of goodwill because I think people recognize that it's doing a lot of really good work, and it's been a struggle for sure, and there's definitely downsides, and I understand the perspective of people who feel nervous about places like Right to Dream 2 proliferating, and I understand the people's concerns who feel nervous about maybe it keeps people away, but in our experience, that hasn't happened. In fact, I think Right to Dream 2 has been a real benefit for the immediate surroundings because Right to Dream 2 patrols and Right to Dream 2 keeps the block that it's on really clean, much cleaner than it would be. So I think that there's a lot of recognition that Right to Dream 2 has some positive impact. And I think that we need to make the opportunities to talk about the people who have concerns, to be able to bring those concerns forward and for us to be able to address them and, you know, approach it from a kind of an honest perspective and a willingness to try to see both sides and a willingness to try to figure the problem out instead of it being like one side versus another. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing about a lawsuit. But sometimes the only way you can make progress is to push back until both people realize, well, you know, we've been pushing and pushing and nothing's happening, so maybe we should talk.
And in doing that, you named some of the positive things. What are some of the accomplishments that people and the organization Right to Dream 2 has made since October 2011?
I think that it has, at its most basic level, it's given people, a lot of people, stability that they didn't have. And that stability has enabled them to navigate the housing system, to navigate the healthcare system, to find employment that they wouldn't have been able to find without a kind of a base to operate from. We've had a lot of people, over 60 people, I think, get into housing, and including people who've been on the streets for years and who could never quite manage to get it together before Right to Dream 2 existed. And we've had people get jobs. We've had people get their health sorted out, get their medical situation sorted out, get treatment that they needed. And I think that one thing people don't realize if you've never had the experience of being homeless is that it's really hard to navigate all these systems, and it's really complicated to do that when you're also dealing with, I'm not sure where I can sleep tonight. I'm not sure, you know, where I'm going to eat tomorrow. And Right to Dream 2 gives people a very low barrier place to rest, and you can't function if you can't get rest. So I think that that's why it's been really successful. It prepares people, it helps people get to the next step in whatever road they're traveling.
Okay. How is the Right to Dream 2 model spreading across this state and or this country?
I think Right to Dream 2 offers a little bit of a different model from some of the other places that we took inspiration from, like Tent City 3 and 4 in Seattle and Nicholsville in Seattle and some places in, like, well, even Dignity Village. I think that it's given other people a different way of thinking about camps or rest areas, which is the term we prefer. we, for example, had a meeting a couple of weeks ago in Roseburg, Oregon, where people from Opportunity Village in Eugene and people from Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village came down to talk about these different areas and these different models. I think that it makes people realize there are more possibilities. You know, through working with organizations like Right to Survive and Sisters of the Road, who are both connected to the Western Regional Advocacy Project, word about what Right to Dream 2 is doing has spread to California and other places where, you know, they also are kind of working on different models. You know, I don't know that there's an exact clone of Right to Dream 2 yet anywhere, but I think that there are aspects of Right to Dream 2 that other people are starting to incorporate in the way that they're thinking about setting up areas that where people who are unhoused can access. You know?
And in lieu of, in this case, this is a group of houseless people that's fighting for their rights and standing up to the city, saying no more. And along with Sisters of the Road, Right to Survive, Right to Dream 2, is working on the Homeless Bill of Rights so people can stand up. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Homeless Bill of Rights is another movement that is spreading across the country. A whole bunch of different states now are working on versions or aspect of a Homeless Bill of Rights, and they don't all look exactly the same. But in Oregon and in California, we're working on a fairly comprehensive bill that would seek to end the criminalization of people who are unhoused. It goes back to things like I was talking about with the anti-camping ordinance, the way people get treated just for existing, and we think that it should not be a crime just to exist. I think, again, people don't necessarily realize that a lot of stuff anybody does, from sitting down on sidewalks or sitting down in public places, you know, when you look a certain way, when the authorities, be it police or private security that's associated with business improvement districts and stuff, think that you're homeless, they treat you differently. And people who are unhoused get targeted by these kinds of so-called quality of life ordinance or livability ordinances. And so we're trying to bring attention to that, and we're trying to put some basic protections for people in the law that would stop that.
Do you think if that Homeless Bill of Rights law was in effect, will it be easier for places like Right to Dream 2 to exist, and this July 11th court day wouldn't be possible?
Would it be easier for it to exist, or would it be easier? I think it would help a lot, because I mean one of the things that we hope to do with the Homeless Bill of Rights is really educate a lot of people who are unhoused about what rights they have, and make sure that they understand, you know, that they have both rights and responsibilities. And I think that that's one thing Right to Dream 2 has been really good at, is, you know, when people come in, they understand that this is a place for them, and but that they also have to treat it well, and they have to respect themselves, and they have to respect other people who are using it. And I think that that mirrors the effort that's going on with the Homeless Bill of Rights, that we want people to understand that they deserve basic human rights, and they deserve to be treated the same as everybody else. They also have to treat other people the same way. So I think the two go hand in hand. I don't know that having this in the law would necessarily directly impact Right to Dream 2's legal situation or even its code situation, but I think it would help shift thinking in ways that would be beneficial.
Any last comment you would like to say for the listening audience?
I hope you can come out on July 11th at 8:15 and show your support. We could really use it.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Ground Zero, Portland, in a houseless community. The topic of our show is July 11th. And I'm here with an organizer that's been with us for a while, and his name is
Greg Margolis.
Greg Margolis, what do you know about Right to Dream 2?
Well, I know that it's a very exciting grassroots, self-organized group of houseless folks who have created a rest area down on 4th and Burnside, Portland, downtown Portland, that has now been running efficiently and successfully for going on close to 2 years, despite the attacks on it by the city, which is what the July 11th hearing is going to be about.
Okay. And you've been involved for about a year, yes?
Yeah. When Right to Dream 2 was first started, it was right around the beginning of Occupy, so I kind of was aware of it, but I didn't get intimately involved until, you know, maybe 6 months or a year into it.
Why do you think Right to Dream 2 is suing the city or taking the city of Portland to court?
Well, the city, rather than accepting the good work that Right to Dream 2 is doing, is trying to force them off the property by identifying them as a recreational campground instead of a houseless rest area, transitional housing type of model that it is. They're doing that because they don't like the idea of the homeless situation, houseless situation, being so transparent and evident in downtown Portland, because they want to push it out of sight rather than admit that they can't take care of what is becoming an epidemic problem.
When would this day be?
Yeah, the hearing is on July 11th. Now, the lawsuit against the city is stating that the definition of the rest area as a recreational campground is wrong, and that the fines that the city has been issuing should be stopped and rescinded, all of the fines that have come up. And the hearing on the 11th is a motion for summary judgment by the city trying to get our case dismissed. And at that hearing, it's possible that it will get dismissed, but we have some hope that it will not, in which case it'll go to a regular court trial on our underlying lawsuit.
Since you've been there, what accomplishments do you know of that Right to Dream 2 has established since October 10th, 2011?
Well, you know, there's been some very detailed records kept by the people who operate the self-operated rest area, have kept specific statistics over a year and a half, and have determined that 25,000 people have been assisted in Right to Dream 2. That means 25,000 people have slept in a safe and comfortable environment with community support, with a healthy environment to try to get their lives back together. That's one statistic. I think over 50 or 60 people have found regular housing as a result of having an opportunity to get that sleep that they need. A similar number have gotten jobs. And I think one of the most important statistics is that since the rest area has opened, there have been literally zero times when the police have had to come and intervene because of the great job of self-governance that the rest area folks have done.
And with all this positive accomplishments and the things that house people are doing, not just for themselves, but the whole community, why is the city finding them? Why is the city even bothering them?
I think that because they're politicians and because our system has become so corrupt through kind of corporate control, they're in denial about the reality of houselessness, and they don't want to do anything that's different than what they're used to, which is a top-down kind of paternalistic system where they know best, and the nerve of the people to find solutions to problems that they can't handle. So it's a matter for them of denial, I think. And it's a matter of being in a corrupt system that we have to change, because without changing the systemic problems, we'll never solve the underlying problems of homelessness.
Now, I know you're on the good people's side.
I hope so.
You're on the real people's side. Okay. What if the city managed to get this case dismissed? Do you think Right to Dream 2 is over with, is finished?
No, not at all. This lawsuit was initiated by Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive, so it won't really harm it significantly if it is dismissed, other than the politicians will try to use it as an excuse to say that they should continue the fines and eventually push Right to Dream 2 out. We have some other tactical things we can do from a legal basis, which we'll probably follow up with if we lose the underlying case, but we're very hopeful that we'll get a solution that's good for the people of Portland and for the houseless community.
It says that, you know, Right to Survive, Right to Dream 2 is an organization that don't want to work with the city, but I know one of the things on the fines is that the fence was too tall. Now that the fence is shorter, how did that happen, and will it make a difference that they did comply?
Well, you know, that was just, again, a technical reason to have a code violation. It really wasn't doing any harm, but it is in the code. So the attorney who's been giving free legal representation to Right to Dream 2, Mark Kramer, who's been really great with his pro bono services, he's a member of the National Lawyers Guild, he suggested that we try to fix that problem so the city couldn't use it as an excuse, again, to have a technical code violation. So eventually the resources were put together to do that, and people came out and helped. And I know, Ibrahim, you know about the specific, I think the Recycling Center helped, or some other organizations helped do it, and now folks are painting the doors, and it's a fundraising event for Right to Dream 2, and it's really a wonderful thing. People who haven't been there should go down and visit and talk with the dreamers, look at the door fan, and get more intimately involved.
And not only that, but it's brutifying the city, brutifying that once disgusted, disgracing area.
Well, what we have, and the owner who gets credit for leasing the property to Right to Dream 2 for $1 a year, Michael Wright, is not able to do what he wants to do on the property, and the city has given him a hard time. But if Right to Dream 2 wasn't there, it would be more of an eyesore than the city claims it is. And frankly, people in the community, the police, the neighbors, have given very good reviews of what Right to Dream 2 has done, both for local security and for good neighbors, being good neighbors. So this attack is not only, it's not only irrational by the city, but it's hypocritical, really.
Hear ye, hear ye. The court's in session. The court's in session. Now here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
Five Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And today we're here in Portland, Oregon, on Ground Zero in the houseless community. And our topic is July 11th. And I'm here with
Dickweed.
Okay. Dickweed, can you tell me about what you know about July 11th?
Well, I know that we're engaged in a fight against the city and that we will be going to court. And at that time, hopefully we will drop the fines that are against us. It's sad that we have to actually be in a fight where human dignity and human rights are being taken away. As far as that goes, I hope that we are quite successful, that right overcomes might.
And when you say we, what do you mean by we?
The houseless community, just everyone that's in the struggle for human rights, everyone who respects human decency, dignity, we are the people. I always believed that growing up, and the longer I live in this country, the less I believe that that's true.
What do you think if the fines are not waived and the houseless community lose in court?
Well, if we lose, it's just, that's par for the course. We're still fighting, but we're here to stay. And eventually they're going to have to see us as a permanent fixture, or they're going to have to address that issue. We're not going anywhere. Where are we going to go? Being houseless has become an epidemic in our country. We are now the new normal. As poverty grows in this country, no one's safe. Everyone is paychecks away from being where I'm at. There is no dishonor in being here.
Do you think that a lot of eyes and attention is on what's going to happen July 11th?
Win or lose, if we get the right people seeing what we're doing, we can change things. I'm hoping that people will watch and pay attention, and they'll care enough to actually become involved. I believe that what we do is inspiring here, and that we have a right to exist. And the more people we educate, how can you not be on our side? How can you not be on the side of human rights? How can you not be on the side of decency, dignity, respect? We're an open culture. We accept everyone here. How can you not be behind that?
What do you think Right to Dream 2 is doing by being in this location of the city? What purpose do you think it's serving?
I think that we are a talking piece. I think that we are in the middle, the epicenter, the heart of the city. And you can't help but see us. We are right in the middle of services. We are right in the middle of downtown. They can't ignore us here.
And do you think that we should have more places in this city like this, in this state, or in this country?
I think we have to have more places like this in the country. In the state, of course. And there already are more places like this becoming a reality. Every single major metropolitan area is going to end up having a place like this. How are we going to be able to survive? And since we've become such a huge reality, then we have to start thinking outside the box. We are a place where we catch everyone. People don't fall through our cracks because there are no cracks. We're at the bottom. This is it. This is where you go. But this is a great place. This is an opportunity. This is us taking care of us, the houseless community, holding each other. It doesn't get any more responsible or grassroots than that.
A question I asked earlier, does it shock you that something has never happened before where a group of houseless individuals is suing the city? How did that make you feel?
I think it's fantastic. I mean, who knew? I have to join with other like-minded people like me. We have to form together and form a central voice. So am I surprised that we're doing it? No, it had to happen. Am I glad that I can be a part of it? Absolutely. I can't wait.
And so you're looking forward to July 11th?
Yeah, completely.
Do you think this is the new going thing now that because you have different type of people living in the streets that know their human constitution and civil rights, that you want to see more actions and demonstrations and rallies like Right to Dream 2?
Either we band together and learn and grow and become more of a community and fight for ourselves. If you know your history, you know that the poor will speak. And when they do, like in France. But if we can meet them on their own ground and in their own battle arenas, if we can take them to their courts and make them see us as human and make them live by the standards that they have in their constitution. And I say their constitution because it ain't mine. I've been on the street. I don't have the same rights as another human being.
And does he think that's because of your social status?
Of course. In a country that lives by the motto, if you work hard and you do good things will happen to you. Well, if you're on the street, obviously that makes you a bad, unproductive person, which is completely and totally ridiculous. I am neither of those things. But our society can't support failure at all. It's an immediate, oh, dismissal of that person as a person.
Do you look at yourself as a failure? I mean, now that you're part of that elite group of houseless people that's found their voice and they fighting back and they suing the city and they have solidarity with all kinds of organizations, even people that live in house. Do you view yourself as being a failure?
I've never really thought of myself in that term. My ideas of success are different than, say, politicians or even a plumber at all. I think that people make a lot of money and do really good things with that money. I think a lot of other people really build a lot of walls of comfort between them and the rest of the world so they don't have to see us. You know, it's very difficult to see homeless people when you live in a penthouse.
What do you want to tell the listening audience about July 11th?
I hope that our new commissioner and our new mayor, the different people that we're fighting against, will see us as humans. I was a square peg going into round holes, and I couldn't fit. Just because I couldn't fit in those holes doesn't mean I didn't have a place. Some could say that if I hadn't gone through my struggles, I wouldn't have found this place, and I wouldn't have found this struggle. And I feel right every day when I wake up, and I want others to feel right too. And if they can get behind that, and they can hold my hand and come along and join us on our fight, maybe they'll find their place.
What kept me alive is my dream.
But I'm a dreamer, but I ain't the only one. Got problems, but we love to have fun. This is our world, from here to your hood. We alive, man, it's okay to feel good. I'm a dreamer, but I ain't the only one. Got problems, but we love to have fun. This is
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Ground Zero, Portland at Right to Dream 2, a homeless rest area. And our topic of the day is July 11th. And I'm here with
Christopher Perkins.
Christopher Perkins, how long have you been living on the street?
I have been homeless close to a year now.
How is it living in the streets?
I will never forget the first night I was homeless. It will probably stay with me the rest of my life. It's been a big shock. At the same time, I feel very fortunate actually to have gone through this, because I had no idea the trials that the houseless community are going through as far as persecution from the police and just the system in place to help deal with homeless and the different aspects to that.
Do you know that on July 11th, that the rest area called Right to Dream 2 is going to court for suing the city?
Yes, I've heard about that.
How much do you know about that?
I believe I know quite a deal. The rest area is fined, from what I hear, close to $1,500 a month for being a recreational, quote-unquote, campground, not the shelter that it actually is. I believe the whole purpose of the lawsuit is to get those fines to stop.
Do you think Right to Dream 2 is breaking any laws or any coding or zoning?
Not at all. Not at all. I see it as a solution to the widespread problem that is homelessness, houselessness in the Portland area. There's just nowhere near enough spots in shelters for the houseless community.
What if this model is spreading across America? This state, where are some of the places have you known to come and replicate the model of Right to Dream 2?
As far as so far, I believe there's one in Eugene, in Salem. I hear there is one back east that is, if it's not already operating, is underway. I believe in Northern California is also looking at this model.
If people in different cities and different states is looking at this model, do you think the city officials should be finding a place that's helping houseless people?
Not at all. They should be thanking you for helping them with a solution to the problem. And obviously, if other states are trying to institute rest areas of the same kind, it's doing some good and it's successful in what it's setting out to do.
So what message do you, as an individual houseless person that's been on the street and seen some good and bad times, what message do you want to put out to the general public and the city officials about finding Right to Dream 2?
I would just like to plead with them to wake up and realize that what the consequences of closing Right to Dream 2 down would mean, having to go somewhere else, somewhere unsafe, somewhere where business owners and law enforcement alike doesn't want them, putting them at risk for all kinds of violent crimes.
Have you ever heard of houseless people gathering together, suing the city officials? I mean, when you hear that, what does that do to you?
I feel empowered. It's a good feeling, because up until now, no, I've never heard of a situation of a group of people, especially houseless people, banding together to tackle something as monumental as suing the city.
Do you think this will open up the eyes of the city or the public?
Certainly should. I'm hoping that it does. It wakes a lot of people up.
Now, what if, let's make this a twofold question. What if we win? What do you think would happen then?
If we win, I would like to think that the city council will have to recognize that we are part of the solution and we are not an eyesore. We're not part of the problem. Basically, if they would stop fining us and actually support us, we could do way much more good. And it's limitless, basically, of the change we could bring about in the houseless community in general.
And what if the court says, what if they win? What would you think would have the city win?
If the city wins, Right to Dream 2 and houseless people in general, we are not going to give up. We are going to keep fighting, and we will still be here, one way or the other.
And now that you've seen that Right to Dream 2 had came into compliance with shortening fence, do you think that's a positive thing to show the judge that we have met things that we're capable of doing and not becoming what we're not?
Oh, most definitely. Obviously, they can see that we are, at least we are trying to meet them halfway, and we are not completely turning a deaf ear to their requests, their complaints. We are willing to, like I said, meet them halfway and work as far as bringing things up to code.
Why would they attack a rest area?
That's a good question, Eve. I see no real purpose for that. Other than, I think what it always ends up breaking down to is a financial matter. Obviously, we are in prime real estate area and could be considered an eyesore by some city officials and businesses. Rather than seeing us for what we are, they see the whole not in my backyard stigma.
Do you think if this was a concept derived by the city official, would it be such a problem as it is now?
Not at all.
And do you think that it should be more places like this within the city?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And where would you have those located at?
Where would they be located? Ideally, it would be anywhere a high homeless population, where it would be a lot easier for the houseless to go about their days, take advantage of the services that are offered to the houseless people, and not have to travel great distances to get to sleep at night, preferably on corners, major streets.
Are you looking forward to July 11th?
Oh, definitely, definitely. It's going to be a big day, a monumental day.
Is there anything else you would like to say to the listening audience?
Support Right to Dream 2. Come down and buy a bumper sticker or some buttons.
Or a door.
Or a door.
Okay, thank you much. Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And today we're on Ground Zero Portland in the houseless community. And the topic of our radio show is July 11th. And I'm here with
Pamela Dahl.
Pamela Dahl, how long have you been houseless?
Almost a year.
And in that year, were you living on the streets or in garages, cars, couch surfing? Under the bridges and bushes or where?
For the first week, I didn't even know shelters existed. So I was staying in parks. And then I was brought here to Right to Dream, too. And I stayed here and under the bridge a couple times when it was full.
What was life then in a park and under the bridges?
It was scary. I didn't know. I was scared to go to sleep. I didn't know if I would be messed with or if I would be attacked or anything. I had never been in this situation.
And so what you was relying on what you heard or saw on TV about what people do on the streets and houselessness?
Yeah, the only thing I had known about being homeless was from movies. And I thought everyone was dangerous and there's gangs everywhere, and I only have slept once by myself because I've always made sure I had friends with me to protect me if something happened.
And now what do you think about living on the street?
Well, I stay at Right to Dream 2 now, so I like knowing that there's security 24 hours a day and knowing that I can sleep safely and I don't have to worry about waking up every couple minutes to make sure I'm okay or whatever. I can actually get a full night's sleep.
Your presumptions about living on the street would be that you would be messed with by other houseless people. And you just said that you really don't know. But do you hear stories about other houseless people messing with houseless people?
I've been robbed a couple of times by other homeless people. And I know there are cliques of different kinds of homeless people, I guess. But I haven't really been messed with too much, I guess. But I also try to stay away from a lot of them.
That being harassed and stuff, what do you think is worse? By other homeless people or by the police?
The police. I actually have more actual real friends that are homeless people now than I've ever had in my whole life. I've been messed with the police just from sitting up against a building. They always find a reason to mess with homeless people. Always. But I will see regular people who go to bars or whatever. They're carrying around open alcohol containers or whatever, and they don't get messed with.
And by you bringing up regular people, how do they treat you now?
There's both. I mean, some are really nice about it. Some don't believe that I'm homeless. That's the one thing that I still can't get over when people say something. Like, I've learned to get over when people say rude comments, but when they say something because I'm homeless, that, like, you know, I'm less than a human or something, that still gets to me, and I have to say something every time.
Now let's go back to Right to Drink too. You say you feel safe there and you're getting good sleep and you don't have to wake up every 2 to 5 minutes.
I get along with everyone. So
tell me, what do you know about July 11th?
That we're going to sue the city to stop fining us, right?
And do you agree the city fining us?
I don't, no. We're not doing anything wrong. In fact, we're keeping people off the streets where they would probably be more of a problem. Having them in doorways and stuff is what, I mean, to me looks worse than having, we sleep 46 overnighters in here, or we have spots for 46, and them being in here is at least keeping us all in one little spot instead of having us all over the businesses and stuff that I'm sure they don't like.
You're building a community here. I mean, because you said you staying here safe, right? So people do have your back where you can sleep.
I guess I made friends with everybody in here one way or another, and I know I've had people come by and be rude out here or whatever, and within seconds I have at least 3-4 other guys coming out to make sure that no one's messing with me.
And so The city is fining us. Do you know why they're fining us?
Because they think we're camping to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in layman's terms, that's what it is. What it is, they're calling us a recreational campsite. But you want to let them know that this is not a recreation because of what you just said, right?
Right. I mean, I have fun in here, but it's because I make it fun for myself. But no, we're camping to survive. If we didn't have these tents, we have the harsh elements of the weather and stuff, and I probably wouldn't have been able to make it through the winter out here without being able to come in and sleep here and have a blanket, because people steal my blankets whenever I was out there. And
you're a young, attractive woman, and being on the street, is that hard?
Yeah. I get messed with all the time. All the time. So when the recent rapes started happening and we kept women inside at night, like, I get messed with during the day. I'm not even going to risk it at night by myself. So it's nice to come here, too, for that. And, having the second tent open for women was nice, too.
What do you want to see happen July 11th at the courthouse?
I hope they stop fining us so we can actually put the money to, you know, making this place better. And I mean, I don't know if we're trying to make more room for more people and stuff, but we could make this place better regardless, and money would help.
They really taking money from us to be productive, to put it in their pocket. And so have you ever asked them the question, what are they going to do with the money taken from poor people?
I've never asked them because I've never spoke to them, but I didn't know this was more than just a place to sleep, really, until I became probationary member and stuff. Like, I'm just starting to learn all this stuff about it.
And in that, what you learn about living on the streets, that it's not like what you've seen on TV or heard on the radio.
No, not so much. It was a reality check for sure. I mean, I put myself in a lot of dangerous situations. I'm lucky to be alive. And now that I know that I'm more aware of my surroundings, like, I know that I'm lucky to be in here. Because I just took it as a place to sleep and whatever, and go run off and run amok during the day or whatever. And No, I'm here most of the time, like 95% of the time, even the day I'm here, even when I don't work. I'm usually working on other things around here.
And how does that make you feel being in here?
I like being a part of something. Like, I don't know, it's like a little family. Like, I mean, there's people I don't, that are annoying or whatever, but we're still, like, you know, we have each other's backs. We're all here for the same cause, I guess.
What would you like to see the city do about houseless issues or houseless people?
There's a lot they could do. I mean, if they have such a problem with us being on the streets, they could put up places for us to go, and they stop harassing us so much. I mean, because not just homeless people have problems out here. I didn't know. Like, I was like, oh, well, they're homeless. You know, they just don't want to get a job. They're lazy, whatever. It's not that easy. I mean, I would love to work, but I mean, I still haven't found a job.
So why do you think they picture homeless people doing that? And why do you think this is a two-part question? And why do you think they pick on houseless people?
I think they look at homeless people as being lazy. So, like, they choose to be homeless. I mean, they don't want to get a job. They want the easy way out. Just because I'm homeless doesn't make me a bad person.
So why do you think the police or the city officials pick on houseless people?
Someone to blame it on. It's true. It looks better to them if they can move the homeless people out of here because we make them look bad or whatever. We make the city look bad. We're still humans. That's the one thing I hate the most, is being treated like I'm not human. It really hurts my feelings. Because I did start to at least know names of people out here from being in different places, like all the feeds together or whatever. But, I mean, I see new people all the time, and I don't see people disappearing from going to housing.
So where do you see people coming out from lack of housing?
Right, yeah. I mean, there's a lady that stays here that just became homeless a week ago, I believe, and maybe 2 weeks now. And she had happened to pass here before when she wasn't homeless, so she knew this was a safe place to come. And that's why she stays here now. But, you know, she obviously wasn't expecting it. I mean, she just lost her job and couldn't pay for things anymore and ran out of savings and stuff. And, I mean, that's a lot of our stories.
So do you think they need more Right to Dream 2 rest areas in this city?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it helped me, and I know it's helped plenty of other people in here. And, I mean, if I didn't have here to go to, I don't know if I'd be alive. It's a good thing. Like, I don't understand why they don't see the good thing that's going on. And plus, while we're in here, we're obviously not out there running amok like they think they do.
Yeah, he, the cone of swing, is just about ready to do that thing. I don't want no tears, I don't want no lies. Above all, I don't want no alibis. This judge is hip, and that ain't all. He'll give you time if you're big or small. Fall in line, or this court is neat. Peace, brother.
Uh-oh, here come the judge. Here come the judge. Everybody know that he is the judge.
I am your host, Lisa Faye, here on Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. Today we are coming to you from Ground Zero in the houseless community. The topic for today's show is the lawsuit initiated from Right to Dream 2 versus the City of Portland. The hearing is scheduled for 9 a.m. July 11th. That's tomorrow. In this show, we shall hear from housing advocates as well as dreamers who live at Right to Dream 2 on their views about the lawsuit and what it means for the houseless community and the future of Right to Dream 2. Thank you for tuning in to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Also heard around the web at www.kbu.fm. The time is 7 o'clock. Up next is Hard Knock Radio. News, views from a hip-hop perspective. Right after these messages.
On Friday, July 19th, from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., tune in for KBOO's one-day flash drive fundraiser. A day filled with news and music from the equator to Antarctica.
Lecture topics will include climate change, gay rights, and an overview of African land grabs. Don't miss out on the chance to explore underrepresented music and news from across the Southern Hemisphere on July 19th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Good evening. This is Roscoe Mitchell, and I would like to congratulate KBOO for keeping the music strong for over 45 years. Congratulations, KBOO.
Linton Feed and Seed of Portland has been supporting rural and urban farmers with leading agricultural products since 1946